Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Your one-stop shop for sports talk.
I get my sports information.
Sports.
Sports.
The Weekend Rocks with Butch and
Evan Dreyk.
Whether it's Pats, Sox, B's, or C's, Butch Stearns and
Evan Dreyk
put it all on the table, and they let you air it all out as well. So let's get to it. Here's Butch and
Evan Dreyk
on Sports Radio WEEI.
Gotta live it every day, Evan. Gotta live it every day.
I'm trying to live something every day. I don't know what yet, but something.
Yeah? Yeah, one day at a time, my friend.
That's all you can do, Butch.
One day at a time.
That's the one thing, as cynical and jaded as I do sound about a lot of this stuff, and the how we buy into the narratives, and how we want to explain winning and losing away. Sometimes you just win, sometimes you just lose, and people need to leave it at that. The one thing I do appreciate a lot more is these cliches are right. You control what you can control. That's it. There's not much else you can do, because you'll drive yourself crazy if you think about other stuff. I don't think I understood that when I got into this business. Take it a day at a time, step by step, all that. It's all true, Butch.
Well, don't we learn as we get older in life?
Just trying to help the team.
Well, that the cliches are right. You're absolutely right. The one day at a time thing. If you think, how many times have you had this conversation in your life? Where am I going to be in 5 years? I have these talks with my daughters all the time, my wife and I, about, oh, what do you want to do? You know, and it gets overwhelming. But the bottom line is you really break it down to the one day at a time. Well, what type of job do you want? What opportunity do you want? Well, you don't get that opportunity without getting the interview. You don't get the interview without searching in the field that you want. And you don't get that job until you get the interview. So it's the chicken and egg. And how do you do that? Well, you have a good day today. You sit down and you spend 2 hours researching companies and see what opportunities are out there and try and get an interview.
You could get the interview without putting yourself out there. Maybe if daddy, you know, spent some money to go to Mar-a-Lago and got a nice picture, maybe with like a president or something.
Hey,
that
wake
help
up
me.
And smell the coffee. That's how life works.
You're right. It's good to be corrupt and have money.
You know what's funny about that? You quickly went from inspired by Badlands to how you're going to take one day at a time to the jaded Evan Dreyk.
The brain
right
is a
away.
Dangerous
it just flipped
place.
The switch. Were you playing cards on a plane all of a sudden in your mind there? You flipped the switch.
What are you doing on a plane?
Like
you're
the Celtics
book reader?
Did.
You read books?
I sleep.
Always?
Often.
Movie? You don't watch a movie if you can?
I do watch a movie, but I usually sleep. I have some playlists I've downloaded, a lot of Springsteen
Will
songs.
Will you ever pay for the Wi-Fi?
No.
See what's going on? Make sure you keep
no,
up with the
I'm
news.
Cheap. I don't pay for a lot of stuff. Sometimes I'll buy a movie.
You make the company pay for it.
I did watch Bohemian Rhapsody on the flight to spring training.
I haven't seen it yet.
It's good.
Horrible movie.
Why?
That you got a minute?
Yeah, go ahead. Go off.
Oh, okay.
John Anderson seems to be a music guy, too.
I am a music guy. I didn't like the lip syncing in it. I thought the only good part about it was Rami Malek's performance. Brian May just took the whole thing over and tried to make it about the band. No one cares about the rest of the members of Queen. We want to know about Freddie Mercury.
Yeah, but so you didn't get enough about Freddie Mercury? He was the main character in the movie.
Yeah, they kind of whitewashed some of like the homosexuality part of it, too. He just looks over at a dude and they make eye contact, and that's pretty
well,
much
what
it.
Did you want something more graphic, John?
I would have liked that they don't gloss over it the way they did.
Were they trying to make it palatable for the general audience? Was that the issue?
I guess, yeah.
I don't know. I enjoyed
Star is Born was
better. I have a very simple litmus test when it comes to movies. When I walk in that theater, or I'm on that plane, or I watch that movie, does it take me away for 3 hours? Sometimes it takes me to a place I don't want to be, and it's disturbing. But does it take me away? And that movie took me away. I grew up watching Queen, so it was interesting. And I know they overblown the whole Live Aid thing, and they made it like Queen made all the phones ring when it actually U2 played right before them and made the phones ring. But
one of the greatest performances ever, by the way. U2 at Live Aid.
Oh, yeah.
Bono, like, saved that girl from getting crushed by the crowd and then slow danced with her on stage.
Yeah.
I watched two movies last night that I had not seen before. 2001 A Space Odyssey, which is a trip.
Oh, yeah.
It's only 51 years old.
A Clockwork Orange?
No, I have not seen. I got to go. I clearly need to watch some more Kubrick, but the other one was Double Indemnity.
Never saw that,
which
I don't
is
think.
An old.
Who's in that? Double Indemnity.
I'll tell you who it is right now. It's a famous old movie, but
Double Indemnity. Was that Tom Berenger and?
No, this is Double Indemnity is from the 40s. It's I mean, Tom Berenger might be too, but let's see. Fred McMurray, Barbara Stanwyck.
Fred McMurray, my three sons. Fred McMurray
sure.
from my. I got to go back to calls. I don't know where we're going with this. Let's go to Glenn in Natick. Who's next? Hello, Glenn. Welcome to 2001: A Space Odyssey.
Oh, hey guys.
How you doing?
All right.
This is Hal.
Glenn, are you okay? Should we take your blood pressure, your pulse? You sound a little down.
I do?
Yes. You do?
Oh, no, I'm fine.
Okay. All right. Good.
Okay. Regarding Amendola, I'd certainly like to have him back. I think he could be a good third or fourth guy, you know, like he was before with the Patriots. I guess what bothered me earlier was Evan was talking about, and correct me if I'm wrong, but he's sort of making this broad sweeping assessment that local fans can't discern which players
he was
come back and which can't.
You have a right to be pissed off. He painted us all with a big, broad brush.
That's what I do.
We're stupid lemmings who drink the Kool-Aid and just follow the jerseys.
Keep going.
I know. Am I wrong in saying that? Or
yeah. Is he wrong? Is Glenn wrong?
I think that's right, but let me see where you're going with it.
No, my point is, and it is part of sports radio talk, and I hear this on other stations where, you know, certain hosts will make this sweeping assessment of fans when the reality is it's probably a small portion of the fans who might feel a certain way. I don't think that every move Belichick makes is great. I don't think that every player who's left here is going to...
You know you're saying this out loud, right? They can find you. You know this. You know that by saying out loud that Bill Belichick doesn't always do everything perfectly. I'm not saying you're endangering yourself, but you just want
what
to think about
what is Glenn saying
this.
That's wrong?
Nothing. Well, no, he's right. It's just refreshing. How many times do people call in and say that, though?
I might have to go into witness protection. I'm
exactly.
Not sure, but, no, I guess my point is, you know, I think there's plenty of people out there. I mean, I know there's a lot of people who were pissed about the Butler thing last year. And certainly people, I've heard plenty of people, you know, get pissed off about his moves. And then the other part of it is, I don't think that every player that's left New England Patriots in particular is a great fit to come back here. I just think that's idiotic to say that.
Glenn, would you agree with this? We don't always know what it means to be a good fit to come back here. I mean, it's not like the Patriots have only had one type of, you know, talk about broad brush painting here. We act like there's one type of player who fits the Patriots' way. When you've had anybody from, Randy Moss down to whoever you think is the counterexample of Randy Moss.
No, I agree with that. I thoroughly agree with that. What I'm saying is, like, you know, like, say, take a Chandler. Oh, no, I'd let Jamie Collins as an example. He left, and I don't think he'd be a good fit to come back here. I just don't necessarily think he's a guy that was willing to sort of subjugate himself, for lack of a better word.
Is it because he didn't play enough cards?
Yes, he didn't play enough.
Well, I mean, that's it, right? That's what makes a good team.
Here's what I think you're negating, Evan.
When you play cards on the airplane for 6 hours, that turns around your whole season. There's
exactly.
No Glenn, here's my problem with what I think Evan is negating today. Number one, you're ignoring the results. Whether it's an individual guy that comes back that fits back into the system for whatever reason, and also the Celtics plane thing. I mean, you joke about it and you keep coming back to it. But look at the three games
since
they happened.
But we look at results and then we
What do you mean I'm ignoring the results?
No, not you, Glenn. I'm talking about Evan.
He's talking about the real dummy on here. Not you, Glenn. Me.
I don't think Evan's ignoring the results.
I think he is. He's saying he's not buying into this plane ride was so monumental. Oh, but there is a reason that they flipped the switch. Now, Evan, I'll give you this.
Why does there have to be a reason?
We stopped the flip the switch thing.
Because they did.
They may have, but we don't know that yet. They've had.
Well, yes, we do, Glenn. In my opinion, they flipped the switch because of their. Have they played this well for three games in a row together as a team all year long?
What? Are you kidding me? I didn't even call about the Celtics, but now you're ridiculous. Early in the year, they played well. They had great stretches where they played well. I mean, come on.
Yeah, but this year for 65 games has mostly been marked by a team that feels dysfunctional, that feels like they don't know their roles, and feels like they don't play together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, the last three games, they feel like they're together now. That's flipping a switch.
Maybe they are, but we don't know that yet.
Well, true. I agree with that. It's a small sample, and we'll find out in a month when they start in the playoffs. Yeah, but
I hope they have. But, I mean, this whole concept where, you know, Kyrie Irving, like, and some of these other guys, you sit there, we're going to flip the switch when the playoffs come. I mean, do they really? They're not that talented where they can flip the switch when the playoffs come. They're not. They have some talent, yes. But they're not. It's not the 85, 86 Celtics.
No, but they on that team. Please. They have as much individual talent as any team in the East. You got to admit that. Who has more talent than them? Toronto.
I would say they're on par. But again, like, do you expect them to go win on the road, two or three series on the road?
I don't know. Are they trying out Rummy 500? Are they saving that for when they really?
Yeah,
need
I do.
It,
I actually do, Glenn. I think they can beat any team in the East.
No, I'm not saying they can't, but I'm saying they're going to have to at the moment. At minimum, they're going to have to go through two series where they do not have home court advantage.
Well, no, you're right. If it doesn't change, thanks for the call, Glenn. It's a good one. If it doesn't change, let's be clear. If they end up as the fifth seed, they're going to have to win every series on the road. They're going to open every series, all three series, to get to the NBA Finals on the road, and they're going to have to win playoff games on the road, or their season's done. It's really
let's say
that
they
simple.
Do it. Let's say they end up in the five seed. They rattle it off.
Well, if they end up in the
five, shock the world.
Wait a minute. Let's do it. If they end up in the five seed, they're either playing Philly or Indy.
Mm-hmm.
They can beat both those teams. They can
beat.
They can
beat anybody, as we've seen.
Right.
I don't think that's gone away. Who had the quote somewhat recently? There's still a team that you look at in a playoff series, you don't want Grosbeck. That's right. That's right. It was the owner of the franchise.
I don't think teams want to play us, was his quote.
And he's right. He's right about that. But to kind of connect it back to the overall point I've been hammering home here, let's say they do it. But let's say they pull it off. Are we going to get stories about what happened on those plane rides or in those pregame locker rooms and go, you know what?
That's why they did it. You are upset. No, is it Jay King you're upset at?
No, I love Jay King. Jay King and I were colleagues together. And you know how it goes if you work with somebody.
So is there envy or jealousy that you didn't get a plane ride story like that?
No.
Well, what is it?
All my life.
You're all upset about this card game and this plane ride.
I'm upset that, like, because X happens and then Y follows X. Everybody goes, well, why is because of X.
Well, you're but
that's
wait,
all we're
but
doing.
Wait, you're a guy who covered baseball, which is
and
a sport
I can see through
on
the
everyday
BS,
basis.
And
so,
I can see it.
Okay, but great. When they came back from a 10-game road trip and went 8-2, don't you look for causation? Don't you look for what happened on that trip?
I think in baseball, maybe more than the other sports, we're starting to realize that looking for this is why the job can be an existential crisis. This is why I would go home and cry at night because if I'm sitting there,
I'm crying in my beer, my friend.
If I'm trying to get an explanation on a day-to-day basis about why the result fluctuated. In a sport where
no, I didn't give you day to day. I gave you a 10-game road trip, and I gave you results.
You said small sample size a minute ago. You know, in baseball, 10 games isn't much. It's not.
But I also know when I see it, I do the eye test, and what I see on this West Coast trip is a different Celtics team than I've seen all year long. I'm sorry if that's a stretch.
Fair. That's fair.
I think it's more than fair. I think most people would agree that this is a different Celtics team right now. And by the way, which is the most important thing, it might be coming at the perfect time of the year, at the right time of the year. It really might. If they were going to find their identity and they found it in October, great. What good does that do you? It's like the Red Sox finding their identity right now in the last week of spring training.
Well, but there's always an argument. Well, we can get into the Red Sox, but there's always an argument about should a baseball team get hot in September? You want to be hot right before the playoffs or do you want to be cold right before the playoffs? What they found looking at that is it doesn't matter.
Last year's Red Sox are a good example.
Yeah.
April, they were what, 18-8?
Fantastic ball club.
Right.
Yeah, winning in April is what does it. So it was the bonds they made in April, Butch, that allowed them to win the World
Series. Well, I'm going to be the biggest hypocrite in the world because if you look back at every year they've won the World Series, they have had a phenomenal April. So I think a huge start is big in baseball.
Why?
Let me say it a different way. A, the results prove it for at least the Red Sox franchise. When they've had great Aprils, they've won the World Series. They've also had great Aprils and not won the World Series and not done well.
It's passed down in Red Sox.
No,
like you have a cup of coffee in the Red Sox clubhouse, it's just understood.
No, I just think when you get off to a great start, it's a huge difference in a baseball season. It gives you more room for error.
That's true. It allows you to go on a
road trip and, you know, go 2-7 on a road trip and
it's
survive
easier.
That.
It's easier.
Yeah. Let's go to Peter in New Hampshire with Butch and Evan Drellick. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Butch. You're the greatest. 30-odd years. I think there's nobody has done better in more comprehensive sports reporting and coverage than you. I can't name another person. I'd like to ask Evan does he know he's living and working with a legend named Butch? I don't want to get off the Butch puppy, but Evan, learn from Butch. He's a man.
Wow. Listen, after I go home and cry every night, I then turn happy
that
and
was
thankful that I worked with Butch.
Peter's call? Wow.
Butch,
I don't know. They're
you.
Coming
I
out
love
of the
you,
woodwork.
Butch. Everybody loves you.
I don't know.
How long have you been in this town, Butch?
Am I beloved? Well, I was born in this town.
But how long have you been working here?
Since 1982.
You've been working here since 1982?
Yeah, I left.
You know I was born in 1987, right?
I left, but yeah. My first locker room I was in. Ever been in a boys' locker room?
I'll be real with you, Butch. I probably don't appreciate you as much as I should because I didn't grow up here.
That's a good thought to have as we go to break here. So I want you to contemplate on that and think about that when we come back.
Think about how much you really should mean to me.
Yes. More of Butch and Drake right after this.
They make a bobblehead of you?
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Crank it up. The weekend's just got better. Let's return to more Butchin'
Evan Drake
on Sports Radio WEEI.
Ah, yeah, Thin Lizzy. The boys are back in town. Guess who just got back today?
Oh,
the boys. April 9th. Opener, 205, Sox and Jays. Boys will be back in town. It's like a month away. Red Sox home opener is a month away. The season opens 2 weeks from this Thursday. It's an 11-game road trip. I can't remember the Red Sox opening with a 10 or 11-game West Coast road trip in years.
The clocks are changing. The snow is melting, Butch. Can't you smell the overpriced hot dogs?
Oh, April baseball sucks. It's freezing at Fenway.
Excuse me, sir. This is the flagship radio station of the Boston Red Sox.
And listen to it, because if you're at Fenway, you're going to be freezing your tush off. Mike's in North Providence. He wants to talk some Red Sox. What's up, Michael?
Hey, guys. Yeah, you know, just a quick note on the Celtics, quote-unquote, turning it on. Yeah, I don't think that they're turning anything on.
It's a switch, Mike.
No.
They haven't turned anything on. Maybe the lights, but they flipped a switch. Like
Why are you being a Debbie Downer? Why do you think this isn't...
Debbie Downer?
Yeah.
Because after playing pretty much their best game of the season,
yep.
The first game against the Warriors,
right.
Against more middling competition, now Brad shows his true colors, and we have two more Marcus Morris chuckathons instead of like reducing him to a role player status. And then getting away with it...
But Mike, you're missing one huge point. They won a game on the road against a pretty good young team on a back-to-back without Kyrie Irving. Besides that, Mrs. Lincoln, how'd you like the play?
Butch, the object is to win an NBA championship, not beat
teams. Well, last time I checked, Game 7 wasn't in Sacramento that night. That was what was on the schedule. I'm going to be Jimmy Williams now. We play the schedule.
When the Spurs used to flip the switch late in the season, they did so by playing the right way. Not doing whatever the hell they wanted to.
Well, now you're making my point. The only thing I've said all along in these last three games is this is a different team that I'm watching than I've seen all year.
Because I'm saying that what they are is this is back to Brad trying to go and establish Marcus Morris as being something that he's not, and in the process hurting people like Brown and Tatum. So I'm sorry, but we've already been through this.
Okay,
and
we'll see.
What's happening is Marcus Morris is going to flame out in the playoffs, and we're going to be back to having to turn to those kids. Instead, but they're
we'll
not
see.
Going to be properly set up for it.
Maybe they're better with a fire lit under their rear ends. What other explanation is there for continuing to play Morris over Brown? There isn't much.
There's no reason for it. It's just ridiculous. Let me just talk about the Red Sox, because at least I have some confidence in them. It's you know, you got two things going on here. One, I think that they're planning on playing JD, you know, in right field against lefties, just to kind of get Pedroia at the plate as a DH. You know, the mentality being...
You got to get Gordon Hayward back in the lineup, yep.
Talking about...
Yeah, they were the same thing. Pedroia, Hayward, big leg injuries. Go on, I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. So anyways, get Pedroia out there. And the basic mentality being, I'm sure that he's going to see him in the field a bit. But they're going to try to keep him off, you know, keep those sorts of games to a limited enough that he can get comfortable out there and be sort of happy. But the basic mentality is they're just trying to get his bat in the lineup and preserve him for the playoffs.
So do you have another thing? But wait a minute. I just stay on that for a minute, Mike. What, you have a problem with that, or what's your comment?
No, I think it's a good thing. That's what I wanted them to do before.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing for a lot of reasons. And you're obviously a baseball fan, Mike, so you know this. But when you do that, there's a domino effect. You're probably doing it against a lefty, like you said, which now Jackie's out of the lineup, so Mookie goes to center. You also get Pedroia's bat in the lineup as a DH with a righty. You probably put Nunez at second base, which that's another whole argument. But there's a domino effect to all of that by doing that. You know, it's not your best defensive lineup when you take Jackie out of center and put JD in right, but it is what it is. Over the course of 162 games, it's a good thing.
Well, yeah, and the key thing here is to try to get something out of Pedroia. And if Pedroia gets going and he's hitting well, this will be fine. This will work out. You'll get more out of it from Pedroia's bat being in the lineup than losing some on the defensive end. And it's not like the defense is going to fall apart either. You know, JD was fine in the outfield last year.
Pedroia is still their best defensive second baseman, by far.
Yes, but the problem is, right, I completely and totally agree with you, but if you play him every day,
true,
if you play him too much, he will get hurt.
Well, that's not going to happen.
The whole mentality is I'd rather have 400 at-bats of Pedroia, half of it as a
well, he would spread out over 5 years. How many years you get those 400 at-bats?
Just play him right, and he'll stay. He has a decent chance of making it through to October, being relatively healthy, if they just don't resist the urge to say, oh, he played so great, let's play him every day, and then he gets hurt.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be a problem, not only because of how smart Alex Cora is, but about his relationship with Pedroia. It goes back a long way. And there's another big factor in all of this, Mike. He's owed $40 million over the next three seasons. 45, I believe.
So you want to protect that investment.
Well, you have to.
Into him, they can't move him. So, you know what? I'll take 400 at-bats at this way. And you know what? I'm just wondering what you guys think. Is there any chance that Kimbrel comes back on a prorated contract that just basically says, you know what, I'm not getting what I want from anybody else, and he'll come here and play for, like, say, $10 million for, like, the last half of the season, the last two-thirds?
It's a good question. Thanks for the call, Mike. I'll defer to you on this, Evan. In your opinion, the way it ended for Kimbrel here, and somewhat unceremoniously, when that moment, maybe you don't read as much into it as I do, but that moment was taken away from him, moment that all baseball players dream about when you're a pitcher, being on the mound to win a World Series, the fact that he didn't pitch well in the playoffs, the fact that the Red Sox right away, seemingly, like a week after the parade, were not going to spend significant money on a closer. Or during the season when you covered the team, was there anything in your mind that went on that he couldn't, that would prohibit him from coming back here, either egotistically, either emotionally? I mean, from what I think, the way his daughter's thing was handled, that was the team supported him wholeheartedly in that thing, didn't they?
Absolutely. And money, to me, is the largest issue. It's been the largest issue all along. I think going into the offseason, going into the winter, when Dave Dombrowski, on day one of the winter meetings, puts out there that, you know, we're not going to make a significant acquisition or financial commitment at closer, I think back then it was a bit of posturing. And at this point, it's become reality where, look, we're not going to do it. Clearly, Kimbrel is holding out for an amount of money that I guess the market at this point is not willing to give him, but they still have some faith that he will be able to receive. Whatever that amount of money is, it's going to be too much for what I think the Red Sox would be willing to do. There's got to be some point where the Red Sox are like, yeah, you know what? He is worth it. It's worth going over the luxury tax to add this pitcher back to us. I don't think he ran himself out of town by the way he pitched in the playoffs.
I don't either. I mean, I'm asking you because you were there a lot more than me, but from what I remember, I know he was respected by his teammates. I know he was, quote, a good teammate, and I know, as far as the organization goes, I think you just nailed it. I think it's just money. They're not willing to, you know, they're drawing the line somewhere. They know that over the next 2 years, they have 6 to 7 significant guys who all of them are not going to be here. Everybody from Mookie Betts on down, J.D. Martinez, Chris Sale, Rick Porcello, Xander Bogaerts, they're not going to keep them all. And when you add Craig Kimbrel in, they're not willing to commit anywhere near the money he wants, or probably even anywhere near he's going to command over a multi-year deal, because that's part of the bigger picture for them. So I think it's that simple.
Should we be talking about how badly the Red Sox have played in spring training?
Not yet, because...
Why? Why not?
We will in a second.
Spring training doesn't matter?
Wait, I know where you want to go with this. Hold on to that. Well,
I'm so
I want to go back to Kimbrel, the latest on Kimbrel. John Tomasi wrote this yesterday, I believe, and it's out there. There was a report the other day that Kimbrel's been spending a lot of time in Orlando where the Braves train, and, of course, that was his original team where he won Rookie of the Year. The Braves have a ton of injuries on their staff. Yet that said, now Jim Bowden just came out and tweeted out and said, Nats and Braves are, quote, not in on Kimbrel, according to multiple sources. So back to Mike's question. Do you think there's a chance Kimbrel will come back with the Red Sox? And do you think on a one-year big money deal he would do that? I still believe that before March 28th, Kimbrel is going to get like a three-year deal from somebody.
Yeah,
I don't see it being one-year
deal. Is going to happen here. I don't
think it's going to happen anywhere.
Red Sox ownership seems to be willing to spend in one scenario right now. An extension. You, Xander Bogaerts, whoever it might be, mm-hmm. Chris Sale, mm-hmm. one of these guys agrees, okay, we will up our AAV and the...
Well, that gives you some cost certainty also. That gives you some answers
going
forward.
It's a long-term trade-off, exactly.
Right.
Whereas with Kimbrel, their feeling for most of the offseason has been, yeah, if we could sign somebody, we'll do it. At least I thought. But we have guys we like. We have Ryan Brazier. We have Matt Barnes.
Right.
We have Tyler Thornburg. We've got Brandon Work. Go down the list. Go down the line. All these guys, let's see if a couple of them can step up. Let's see who's healthy come the trade deadline. Let's see if in May or June we need somebody. And if we do, we'll trade for somebody. We'll give up more prospects because we'd rather give up a prospect than add more payroll. That's where Red Sox ownership is right now. That's the part that people should be focusing on.
Okay. Now let's go to your point about how horribly they're playing right now. Before you get to Alex Cora, which you're chomping at the bit to do, I know you want to, let me just focus on Kimbrel and the closer situation. If they keep losing 10-2, 11-1, 12-3, right? But, like yesterday, Matt Barnes gets rocked. Ryan Brazier gets rocked. He didn't yesterday.
What's the difference? It's just spring training. What does it matter?
Well, I'll give you my opinion. If Chris Sale, David Price, Nate Eovaldi, and Eddie Rodriguez and Rick Porcello continue to get rocked, I don't have a problem with that. There's enough of a track record. But if for the next 2 weeks their potential closers keep getting rocked, I still don't think there's a chance they're bringing Craig Kimbrel back, but I do think they're making a mistake. Now, can they flip the switch when the season starts? Possibly. But I have major questions about anyone they have on this roster being an everyday closer for them. I have major questions.
Of course.
I don't know if they can do it. Nobody's proven it.
Well, it's to me, when you've kind of been following a team long enough, and fans certainly have, but you have, you've seen it, every explanation gets tailored to whatever your current circumstance is. Dave Dombrowski gets here, 2015. First major move the guy makes. I've said this a million times. I'll scream it until the end of time. First move the guy makes, Craig Kimbrel. Why? We needed the proven closer.
Right.
Oh, but now we don't? So which version of Dave Dombrowski? Well, sure, of course. But you have people kind of sucking it up and taking whatever these guys throw at you at face value. We have Alex Cora talking very often throughout the year when he was asked about, you know, how did you know this team would be good and all this? And he talked about, well, you know, early on in spring training we played well. There's actually a quote somewhere where he acknowledges that the team was playing pretty sloppily to begin spring training last year. It's not true that from day one down there they were playing well. Mookie Betts started off 0-16. He tried his new swing with J.D. Martinez's help, all this type of stuff. So even that's not really true. But now they're not playing well. So you're going to have Alex Cora turn around and go, yeah, you know, it mattered last year a little bit, or at least I thought it did. But this year it's not going to matter. It's not going to matter because I don't want it to matter this year. So this ties into what we're talking about with card games, Butch. It's just the narrative you're being thrown
you
here.
You are unbelievable.
It's all narrative, dude. It's all explaining why was the team good. Why were the 2018 Red Sox good? Well, I knew it from the day spring training began. Let me tell you.
You're upset about the hypocrisy that you're getting.
And just how
which
quickly,
you don't get on a daily basis anymore, my friend, but that's okay. Upset from afar.
Correct.
At the hypocrisy you're getting. I will address that when we come back. Oh, yes. I will address that when we come back after this break, John Anderson. Right after this break.
I'll hold all the cards now.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all.
All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Crank it up. The weekend's just got better. Let's return to more Butch and
Evan Drake
on Sports Radio WEEI.
Some of the media people, you know, have a problem with me still. You know, that's, I guess that's their problem. But me personally, I am, I don't like confrontation. I don't want confrontation. I've always been somebody that gets along with everybody, and that's what I want to get back to doing.
Oh, okay. Okay, buddy. Whatever you say, Dave. Whatever. That's what. It's,
how
it's
did your
like
thing
that.
With David Price come to a head?
Come to a head?
Yeah.
How did it happen?
Yeah. I'm trying to remember.
I got down to the clubhouse.
Yeah.
Another writer happened to say something to me about how he thought I was endangering David Price right before I got into the clubhouse, which was just a strange timing. And everybody walks in, you know, the visiting clubhouse, yeah. Yankee Stadium, right? You got the hallway, then you make a little left. But before we make the left, Price is just sitting, standing there. Kay, can I talk to you? We talked. We yelled. We fought. We cried.
I heard there was a lot of talking by him.
I talked as well. It was not a one-way conversation.
I've been raked over the coals by
everybody has. That's the thing that was partly annoying. It's like, oh, yeah. Jarlick got roomed.
But,
you
know, but when
people
that
get roomed out all the time.
But when that happened, were you surprised? Did it catch you off guard?
Oh, yeah, totally, because all I had done was quote tweet from Shaughnessy's story that day. You know, there was a bunch of things building that I didn't quite realize. It was a grandstanding thing. But it's quotes like that from Price that the Kyrie Irving comparison rings true for me, because you sound hypocritical whether or not you quite realize it. Does he like confrontation? No. Has Price sought it out and kind of engaged in it willingly multiple times? Yeah. So how do you kind of reconcile those two things? When are you being truthful and when aren't you being truthful? He's somebody who, like Irving, I think we've seen grow up before us a bit.
So
just
how do
like
think,
me even, Butch.
So how 617-779-7937, by the way. Butch and Evan Drellick till 6 o'clock. Again, 617-779-7937.
Always blame the media, right?
So what type of year do you think Price has? And
he's healthy, he's great.
But let me put it in this context. Two sort of look at it two ways. From a performance perspective, and let me go down that rabbit hole in a second, and then from a perception perspective. Let's start with the broader one, perception. Has everything changed for him with fans? He proved it in October. That narrative, while it could still be there, people have an argument now. Look what he did last year. I don't care what his record is. He's not Curt Schilling, but I don't care. He did it last year. He proved it. What else does he need to do to you? So that narrative's gone, isn't it?
I mean, it's I was in jury duty, I guess it was last week already, and people were talking about a bunch of sports topics before we got to deliberating. You know, so it's the lunch break with all the jurors. I'm on the jury panel, whatever you want to call that. And there was one person in there who was kind of criticizing David Price, and I go, well, he won. I'm the guy in a panel of my peers who have no idea what I do for a living or what my direct involvement with David Price has done to be pointing out that. But
you're defending him.
Yeah.
In front of a jury of your peers.
Yeah, right. I mean, we're not in the courtroom, but it's funny. Clearly, there is still lingering perception of him as not being, I don't know. It's not that he didn't rub everybody the right way, and I don't know that if everybody loves him now automatically. They love that he won here. I don't think all of a sudden everybody.
Yeah, but do you think that narrative changes?
You can't handle the truth.
That's correct.
Well, the truth is that he performed when it mattered the most, and probably should have been the World Series MVP, or at least shared the trophy with Pierce. It doesn't really matter. The more significant part is, again, isn't that argument dead? Does he have to do it again when it matters? Yeah,
I think that argument has to be.
Okay,
dead.
Then let's go to the performance part. Let's not forget that he opted in. Not that.
Well, he chose not to opt out.
Right.
That is the most technical.
Well, but it was financially, it was a smart move. Those deals aren't coming around anymore. Right. We're starting to see that. So from that simple part, whether he's worth the money or not, I don't know who's worth $31 million a year. But
besides you, Butch, I don't know.
Well, according to a lot of the callers today, you know, my fans keep calling up. But do you think, what type of year do you think he has? Because when you said he'll have a good year, well, he had a great second half last year, but he had his troubles. He had a consistent year last year. I'll give him that. He took the ball every fifth day. He had 32 starts, I believe. But he didn't have a great year. He had a great second half.
He talked to Rob Bradford the other day for a good story, WEI.com, about his evolution as a pitcher. And we've had to see that. And you know, one of the things that was explained to me about his postseason run, I think I might have said this with you before, Butch, is that you know he wasn't doing well to start the playoffs. Obviously, we all saw that. And I think there was a bit of a, all right, I'm ready to accept input from others moment in October. A little bit more of our, what do you got for me? I can't, this isn't working. The old way isn't working. It's not that he wasn't proactive before, but.
So wait a minute, think about what you just said.
Doesn't he seem like a stubborn guy?
Wait a minute, think about what you just said and go back to the Kyrie Irving analogy. So you're painting similar picture, we all are.
But we're talking about a known adjustment.
But wait a minute, that's a key thing you just said. When the games mattered the most and when he got around, all of a sudden, he did a mea culpa or he did a change and he said, you know what? Maybe I should listen to some of the talented, hardworking people around me. Because he went out of his way to say, we noticed some things. I changed some things. In the Houston series, remember?
Yes.
He came out, remember, and he said, we found something.
Yes.
So you're right. So I think that's very analogous to Kyrie. I don't know what happened on the plane. None of us do. But did he come to a moment where he said, you know, maybe I should start listening to some of the people around me. Maybe they're right. Maybe I do need, if I want to lead, maybe on the court, I need to actually prove it to these guys. And I need to earn my respect. Yeah, I've won a championship.
But is that the narrative right now with Kyrie?
No, but I think what you just said really hit home with me. That's part of it. That's part of the criticism of Kyrie. He can go out and score 47 points, yet be a selfish me guy, and it's not best for the team.
Has he acknowledged that he's changed because of this flight?
He sounds a lot different than he did last after the Houston game last Sunday.
Right. My point, you know, we have prices like at point C or D, and Kyrie's kind of on the point A of known changes. We have a little bit more info about what happened with Price than we did with Kyrie in this flight.
Yes.
They just played a card game.
Well, we've got three full seasons with Price now, and we've got two postseason runs. One that he, you know, kept the narrative going that he couldn't win the big game, but sort of started to change it because he did pitch well in relief in postseason last year and then buried it last year. But we have three full years. Yes, it's not fair to Kyrie because we have three full years of David Price. But there are analogies.
But even
there,
in talking about these specific things, the playoffs and this plane ride, we know more about the price changes than we do. Not that we know a lot, but we know more about the price changes than we do Kyrie's changes.
Yeah, but I'm just going, a little light bulb went off for me when you said, when you brought up the point, because I forgot about it, that Price had a moment where he admitted that, you know, started to listen to a lot of other people.
I don't know if he directly admitted it, but that's basically what was explained to me a little bit behind the scenes.
He admitted it. I remember that press conference when he came out, he said, we found something. I'm not going to tell you what it is.
Right.
But to say we found something, that smacks.
Some people think it's
That smacks of Dana Lavangi and Brian Bannister and the rest of the, you know, Red Sox hardworking staff coming out and said, David, come here, I want to show you something. And him taking it to the, he was.
Well, let's say that's true.
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing that it would take until October for that to happen? It's kind
in
of amazing.
In fairness to him, though, again, he had a pretty dominant second half. So maybe he started to listen all along.
That's
maybe
true.
He wanted to give credit when the games mattered the most and make people realize that we're in this together. And I did listen to those guys. And again, we haven't heard that from Kyrie yet, but maybe if Kyrie's as smart a guy as I think he is, maybe some people have gotten to him.
They're going to make a movie about this plane ride, Butch. You and I are doing the screenplay.
Uncle Drew, too. Let's go to Steve in Connecticut. Oh, I'm going to figure this out again. There's Steve in Connecticut. Hi, Steve.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just had a transfer proposal for you. The Mets, they're using Familia as a setup.
Transfer proposal? What sport are we covering?
Trade proposal.
Trade proposal.
You're a soccer fan, huh?
The Mets are using Familia as a setup man, but he was a closer before.
Right.
What do you think about trading Michael Chavis and Blake Swihart to the Mets to get a piece?
Why wouldn't you have just signed Familia as a free agent? You know he was a free agent this winter, the same day Joe Kelly signed, Familia signed.
Yeah, maybe this wouldn't happen until the trade deadline. Do you think like a trade like that could happen at some point during the season?
So, yes, I think a trade could happen like that. And, yes, when it does, I would argue that for the Red Sox to come out and say we're not spending significant money on a closer, I would argue that there are other costs involved. If you're going to give up two of your best prospects, and Swihart's not a prospect anymore, although he is because he's not an everyday player.
He counts.
Okay. Well, if you're going to give up Michael Chavis, who's this spring's all of a sudden four home runs in four games, blah, 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 that's a price to pay. To Evan's point, you could have just signed Familia. You could have just signed him.
Recent deadlines have shown us is that you don't usually have to give up the best in your system to get a good reliever at the deadline. And the Red Sox haven't in recent years. But if you're the Red Sox, if you're the Red Sox and you need a reliever come the deadline, and they wanted one last year when they had Joe Kelly and they had Craig Kimbrell, they had a deal for Kelvin Herrera.
Yeah, you're saying you're not going to have to give up Dahlbeck and Chavis.
You do not want to give up Dahlbeck, Chavis, Darwin's and Hernandez. You would sooner use Darwin's and Hernandez out of the bullpen than you would trade him for another reliever, for a guy who's under control for a year or two at the most volatile position in baseball.
So, Steve, I like your thinking, but your thinking sort of smacks at two things. Number one, you think they're going to be miserable out of the bullpen and don't have a proven closer, and it's going to hurt them to start the season, right?
I think they won the World Series, so I think they're not going to be spending a lot of money right now. I think they're going to let the players play out their contracts, and they're going to see where things fall. And then at the trade deadline, they're definitely going to be looking to
That's a great answer, because what I'm hearing you say is you're willing to give them the benefit of the doubt that they won the World Series and let them use closer by committee and figure it out. Okay, that's fine. I would tend to lean that way, too. I think it's a mistake that they don't have a proven closer, and I'm going to sound like a complete hypocrite, but I'm also willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. I think Dana Lavangi has become a phenomenal coach, and I think the people around him are phenomenal too, and I think they can get the best out of Matt Barnes, out of Ryan Brazier, out of Brandon Workman, out of some other guys in that bullpen, out of Tyler Thornburg. The problem with that is when you slot somebody in as a closer who's not a closer, there's a domino effect to that. And so I think they will go the Yuri's Familia route, but I just looked up his contract. The Mets signed him for 3 years, $30 million. Is that palatable?
This winner.
Right.
This winner. If
and
the
you
Red Sox
done
wanted
that,
they would have done it.
Right.
Right, but they also just traded for Diaz, who was one of the best closers in the game last year, so they don't need Familia as a closer. They're using him as a setup man, so I'm just saying that could happen at some point.
So wait a minute. Think of what you're saying. The Mets signed a guy, a proven closer, to a three-year 30, in your team, a proven closer, a three-year $30 million deal to be 1A, to be a setup guy and a closer, a backup closer. So they're paying $30 million to a guy who isn't even their closer. The Red Sox could have signed this guy as their closer and didn't. So Evan is absolutely right. They decided $30 million over 3 years is too expensive.
It's amazing
for a closer.
They don't even have a notable non-roster invitee. They don't even have one guy that makes.
Well,
you
they got the.
They don't
the
have
guy,
the
they
one million dime flyer.
No, they got the other guy.
There's no name that matters.
Who?
Mejia.
Mejia. Right.
Three PED suspensions. That's our biggest intrigue this spring. It tells you where they are financially. That they did not go out and even add somebody on 1 year, $3 million. That's
as we go
remarkable.
To break, answer this question directly. Are they making a mistake starting the season with an inexperienced closer? By the end of the year, will it cost them? Will the fact that they decided to start this year, as all we just explained, part of drawing their line in the sand? This is about Craig Kimbrell, but it's about more than Craig Kimbrell. They didn't go out and replace him. They don't have an experienced closer. Is that going to cost them by October?
It's going to cost their farm system. I don't know if it's going to cost them in any real way for this year, but it's going to cost their farm system like every other move they've made since Dombrowski got here. Every other move.
One more hour to go with Butch and Drellick right after this.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you.
Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.